On this episode of Mechs and Men, we learn the risks of bootleg broadcasting. Dell finds out this room really is too small, and Stackpole canonizes Commando Magic. Hello, this is Of Mechs and Men, a Battletech book club. I am Kanan Hill, joined, as usual, by my two good friends, Brent.
It's me, Brent.
And Aaron.
It's me, Aaron.
How we doing, boys?
Well, I don't have to replace a 10K C-bill brace, so I'm doing all right.
Well, that's good, because this week, we're covering the entirety of the novella that comes in the Battletech Essentials box.
Spanner in the Works by Michael A. Stackpole.
Let's get into it.
Solaris City, Solaris 7, Ronshear, Lyran Commonwealth, 21st of April, 3027. So we open with the scene of this mech warrior, Dell Thompson, and she's working on her mech with her technician, Ren Jensen. Also, I wanted to point out that this takes place one day after Chapter 32 of Warrior On Guard. This is the next day after Justin kills Billy Wolfson. So they're working on her commando. They're putting this brace on, but they're having this little conversation about how it's bent. They tried to refurb it, but it's still off by 5 centimeters. And it's like, now we got to get a new one. It's like a new one. What's that, like 10K? What do you know? It's like they're having this little back and forth. It's pretty funny.
12,000 C-bills. The damn things aren't made of platinum.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Get a little peek into the day-to-day expenses.
This could happen anywhere at any time. Right. This could just as easily be me and you, Aaron, like working on an old car.
Yeah.
Where we did the bubble gum and rubber band solution. And if we just ponied up the first time, it would have hurt a lot less. I think it's funny that that kind of sets the, it kind of colors the scene here. Right.
Then we see a man approach, comes swaggering up. He's got like a facial scar about his right eye. Salt and pepper hair, close cropped, black mustache grown abundantly to balance the ruin of his nose. It's Philip Capet.
Philip Capet, he's got a mustache. Did you guys he had a mustache before that?
Yeah.
Like, you did? I don't recall there being a description.
Right,
no,
good
I don't
point.
Think there is.
We need to investigate. You know, this is giving me real, like Bill the Butcher in Gangs of New York. Like Daniel Day-Lewis kind of vibes. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just uglier and dumber.
Yeah, exactly.
Although I feel the mustache is like not groomed at all. It's like real caterpillary.
He's seen better days, right? Philip, he had a rough night. They had to scrape Billy out of that, the cockpit of that rifleman.
I bet he was melted to the damn chair.
So Philip Capet comes striding up. And hands on hips, tells Dell that they need to talk. And she tells Philip that he needs to get lost. Right away, we see that she does not like this man. And she makes it very clear up front.
I do like there's kind of a double meaning here when she's like, Philip Capet, get lost on your way to Valhalla. It's almost like this implied like he's a dead man who hasn't found his way to the afterlife.
Oh,
it's
very
also,
good.
It's this like double burn, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree completely.
Yeah. She says, when you say we need to talk, you mean I need to listen, right? And he tells her that it's time you stepped up. And she's like, no. She's like, what are you talking about? She's like, what are you doing? Like, get out of here. And he just keeps going. He's like, you know, your nation needs you. And she's like, they don't. Like, what is it? She's like, oh, that's funny. You don't look a tiny bit like Hans Davian.
It's so funny that after all this time, Stackpole can come back and fall right back into place with Capet, capture the same energy of whenever he's trying to talk to somebody and have somebody can just shut him down immediately. I found that so funny. Like, it really didn't feel like there's such a big break between when these were written.
I will say, though, like, let's be honest, though, Capet's character was just getting shut down.
Yeah.
I don't want to take away the credit you're giving Stackpole here. I agree. But this little novella, it gives us more info on Capet than we've gotten so far in Warrior Trilogy.
That's true.
Capet's really a backseat villain.
Yeah, this is truly like an embarrassment of riches. For us to get... It's like Michael Stackpole was like, here's like a more improved characterization of Philip Capet from that book you're doing. I was like, oh, thank you, sir. This is perfect. He's right. I couldn't believe it. I was like, well, Philip Capet, you know, the last time anyone wrote about this guy was when he wrote Warrior On Guard, right? So this is great. I was so happy. And yeah, he does. He's just as much of a loser as he was back then.
Yeah.
He didn't miss a beat.
Yeah.
So this is where Capet's like, did you see that fight last night? And she's like, oh, yeah, I saw the fight. And he's like, yeah, that Capellan bastard, you know, murdered Billy Wolfson. And she's like, okay. She's like, and then Capet's like, he was a good man, you know? And she's like, he wasn't. No.
Yeah.
No.
She's like, not really. She's like, well, you didn't know him. And then she's, well, he's like, you didn't know him. And she's like, actually, I did. And he sucks. And then she describes why he sucks. And then Philip Capet says, well, yes, that was boorish of him.
Yeah. Boorish.
But he still was a good guy. And it's some real like eye rolls. Like, he's not making the sell here. Right. Nope. She's not buying this used car.
And she says, oh, well, she says that she's from the Draconis March. And so she has like some Asian heritage, and that Billy Wolfson made some like remarks, some like
he was racist.
Derogatory remarks. Yes, exactly. Because he didn't even get it right. She's like, I'm not even Capellan. She's like, that's not even, he didn't even like insult me correctly. He wasn't just mean. He was also dumb, is what we learn here.
Basically, Dell's like, I had to suffer the fool.
I like, Philip says, still, he didn't have to die last night. Zane could have ended the fight without killing him. And I'm like, I mean, I don't know. He just stabbed him once, right? He did. It was the only option he had. He acted like Justin was like toying with him and, you know, murdered him unnecessarily. But really all he did was run up and stab him. And his rifleman exploded. That's kind of not his fault, though.
He also told him before the fight, punch out, despite whatever Capet has told him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, let's be honest, though. We have seen through their actions the foolishness that is the Capellan Mafia. Even the name is a little daft, if I'm going to be honest with you, as I've previously stated.
But they do say, Aaron, you brought this up earlier. This is interesting. They refer to his little gang in this book as the Capellan March Mafia. They specify that. They say
that makes a lot more sense.
Yes, you and your Capellan March Mafia, literally answering a question we had. Thank you, Mr. Stackpole.
Yes. Yep. It also sounds better. CMM, Capellan March Mafia. That's
Capellan March Mafia.
It has like a ring to it.
Yeah, you can see it. I feel like, remember the West Coast Chopper stickers, the WCCs?
Yeah, people would put,
it's in the same kind of like Ed Hardy looking, like trashy kind of font. You know, they put the stickers. Yeah. Yeah, they made stickers.
They do have some Ed Hardy energy, don't they?
They do. Yeah. So Philip warns Dell that Justin, he's coming after every Fed Sons pilot he can get his hands on. Your Fed Sons, he doesn't care if you're Capellan March or whatever. And she's like, okay, but like, I'm low ranked. I'm like a nobody. He's not going to come slum down to get me. She's like, Philip, he wants to kill you, Philip. Like, and everyone knows it. I'm not worried about him. You are.
It does seem like an act of desperation. Like, I got to throw more dudes in front of Justin Zhang so I don't have to fight him. That's what this feels like. Yeah. And it feels like he's like, and Hans Davion is saying that you got to do it. But really, I think it's just Philip Capet and his stupid mustache.
So Capet goes on to tell her that the nation needs her and that out there, everyone's laughing at them. You know, we're a laughingstock out there. All the other nations, you know, they think we're a joke. You know, everyone's laughing at us. And she's like, they're laughing at you, Philip, not me. It's just so, she's so short with him. And she makes it so clear she wants nothing to do with anything he's saying.
I got to point something out here. He says unsurprisingly, he says some ignorant stuff. Like, I love this bit, though, because I think it colors Capet so well, which is he's killed every pilot he's faced. And they were all from the Fed Sons. For him, nationality transcends ethnicity. I like this because it implies that for Capet,
yeah,
that's not the case. Even though that's the real fight here in the inner sphere, right? The real fight here isn't amongst ethnicity.
Like, listen.
It's amongst nationality.
Yeah. He's like, listen, guys like Justin, he's not even racist.
Yeah.
She's like, okay.
It's like the worst sell ever.
And we know that Stackpole can write persuasive characters like very well. He can write a real smooth talker. Yes. He's real good at it. So, you know, this guy, like, he's intentionally dumb.
This guy is intentionally.
Dumb.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. I do like she points back at her mech and she's like, me and Perun are doing just fine. And you learn, oh, her commando, it's named Perun. Perun. That was cool. We love a named mech.
This is so funny. Okay, right. The named mech, and I think it's Perun. It's Slavic because Perun is the highest of Slavic mythology's pantheon of gods. It is another thunder god of war, fertility, oak trees. It's Thor again. It's Thor. Like we've
not again.
It's very funny. It's not a surprise. Even though I like Del, I mean, it's just like, oh, we've got a rolls dice on like what ancient deity the name of the mech is going to be. It's Perun.
At least it's not Ares again.
It's true. At least it's not Ares again.
This is where Philip tells her that it's been a while since he fought a ranked opponent. She's just been hanging out in the lower leagues, new pilots and whatnot. He's like, you know, when's the last time one of your fights even went off-world? And she tells him, well, my fights go off-world all the time. And
we're going to come back to that, actually.
He's like, oh, well, probably just one of the regional distributors, no doubt. He tells her that the small-time distributors just, they just take your footage and they cut it up and dub in new commentary and localize everything. And they even hire actors to do like interviews and stuff with you. They just take your footage and they just cut it up themselves. They do the Power Rangers thing to it, right? I love this. I don't think so far anyone's talked like as much about like the distribution of the fights in Solaris. We even have other books that are about Solaris, like Illusions of Victory, that goes into the like a lot of the commentary and like stuff like that, a lot of the personalities. That book's really cool.
It's a great book. We're going to cover it a long time from now.
And there's that other book, the one with Kai Allard. Oh, Assumption of Risk. Yes,
Assumption
dude. That's
of
another
risk.
That's another good Solaris book. Extremely good title. Assumption of Risk.
You know he was hitting them Clancy books with a title like
oh
that.
Oh my God. It's so good. But I don't think anyone's talked as much about how these recorded holovids get distributed throughout the inner sphere. I think we learn the most about that here in this novella.
I don't get the impression that this is something that happens to everybody's footage, right? It doesn't seem like, you know, the top fights are going to get chopped up quite as much as this. That's the impression I get, though, that these kind of like the lower ranked fights, they get chopped to hell to do whatever.
Yeah, I'd assume that'd have to be something they save, like, exclusively for, like, the jobber tiers of fighters, because it does seem like what they go over here is that they're hiring actors and everything to play the fighters on different planets. They're kind of filling in whatever narrative they want to spin on the fight footage. So the mechs can't be too recognizable. The pilots can't be too recognizable. It definitely seems like below D-lister tier.
Right.
It's like you just have to sell it as like stock footage. It's like B-roll. You know, it's like, here's just a bunch of footage.
Here's a battle. Do what you will with it.
It does make sense, though, that this stuff gets sold and chopped up, right? Because it's like, oh, it doesn't matter who you are. That, like, mechs getting, like, shot up is going to be, like, exhilarating, right? That's going to be good for something. I'm sure that there's even, like, underground, like, battle ROM sales.
Totally.
I know for a fact there is.
Tape trading. It's just like pro wrestling, like, you know, with the little like indie promotions and stuff. Yep. People are trading tapes and whatnot. That's true. It's pretty cool. I like that angle.
But it's cool. We get, like you said, we get like more insight into kind of this stuff than I feel like we really ever have or do.
Yeah. I think Stackpole takes an opportunity here because we got to see Justin slingshot past all of this. Like right off the bat, he came in with a gimmick and we talked about how he found that gimmick and ran with it right away. But he didn't have to go through these lower ranks. He didn't go through the kind of day-to-day Solaris fighter life. And so by highlighting it here, you both get to see it for the first time highlighted, as well as understand how far Justin moved past that and how quickly and how unique Justin's rise in Solaris was.
Yeah, it was just a punch away.
Capet tells her that you'll never make any real money doing that low tier stuff. You got to fight here, Solaris City, in the big arenas. That's where you get the big coverage, big money.
This is where we get the first little hint as to what Capet's here to sell Dell.
Yeah. She tells him, she's like, I do okay. She's like, you do okay? But you were just complaining about a brace that costs 12,000 C-bills. That's really not that much. If you've played the video games, you know that, like, that's, like, not that much.
It's chump change when it comes to all this. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's Capet's point, right? He's like, this is all child's play down here.
Yeah. Well, and he's finally found an angle that got him some traction, because everything else, he's come up with zeros. And now it's like, oh, well, maybe you're poor.
His tires have just been spinning.
Yeah, it's funny. He went for the patriotism first, and then he was like, okay, let's talk about the money. And man, you should have just led with that.
Well, it makes sense, right? Because that way you don't have to do the hard sell, right? If you can hit him, if you can hit him there first. It goes to show that Capet, while foolish, isn't a complete goon.
Also, it's like, Phil, didn't you get kicked out, dude? Isn't it like a major plot point? Like, you got fired. Like,
well, the whole thing surrounding that is that nobody knows. And that was like part of why it was done the way it was.
Yes. Yeah. Justin is privy to his secret past. That's true.
Which is probably one of those reasons that no matter what, they were never going to see eye to eye. That and the fact that he was the one who did the booting.
Well, and if you think about in the timeline of this, it would have been last night that Justin showed up in Valhalla and kind of threw down that first look at like, well, Capet, if you want to sit here and throw barbs, we could talk about your military career.
Oh, man, that's true. It was the day before that he was watching the holotapes in Gray Notan's booth.
Yes.
Damn, he's right.
Great point, Aaron. Yeah, absolutely.
So Capet tells Del that soon, she's going to be offered a fight in the factory. He says, kind of a junior-senior thing, but you'll be the junior. And one of my people will be the senior. And the other junior is coming from your circuit, Boris Vereker. And we learn that she'll be fighting against this guy, Boris. He says, he runs a Jenner that outclasses your commando. But you'll be paired with one of my people. And is that true? Brent, does a Jenner outclass a commando?
Yes, I would say so anyway. Not by much. It's not a long shot, but if I had to pick between a Jenner and a commando, I'd pick the Jenner every time.
Dang.
Oh, we're not factoring commando magic, though.
Yeah, what about commando magic?
Commando magic is a meta data, right? Like, you know, as a member of the universe in Battletech, you can't, I imagine you wouldn't inherently know about the magical properties that commandos possess.
Intangibles, right?
Intangibles, that's right. Yeah.
But Tale of the Tape has a 10-ton difference, so...
It's funny that you bring that up, actually. I didn't think about commando magic this entire book, but that's what this novella's about. It's about gosh darn commando magic.
Commando magic.
Yep.
Yeah. That is the spanner in the works. Oh, yeah. I wanted to point out that, so they're doing like a 2v2, right? He's like, we're doing this thing. It's like a promotional. It's like a pro-am. You know, we have a more experienced pilot, and we're going to pair them with like someone from like the lower leagues. And she's like, okay. And so we learn that Dell's partner will be Sarah Carson. And she's a hunchback pilot, right? She's like this experienced hunchback pilot. It's one of Philip's friends.
Which, as mechs to get paired up with, if two of the mechs are going to be in the medium bracket and you have the hunchback, that's pretty good odds. I'm going to bet on the hunchback.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And so the other pairing is, so we got Boris in the Jenner, and he's paired with Zhu Jin, who pilots a Trebuchet. All right. So we got Hunchback Commando versus Trebuchet Jenner. What do you think?
Now, it's a hard pairing, especially since this is, we don't learn this until later, but I'm going to go ahead and talk about it since we're going to have this discussion right now. But the Trebuchet has the LRM swapped out for SRMs.
Oh, yeah.
In the text, it doesn't declare exactly how many SRMs. So I don't know if it's two pairs of six or if it's just two sixes replacing the two LRM-15s, which does make the Trebuchet much more deadly in this arena. When I first read that it was a Trebuchet versus a Hunchback, I was like, in factory, I was like, it kind of removed tension for me until I learned they swapped the missiles.
That's pretty cool. Actually, yeah, put the short-range missiles in the Trebuchet. All right.
Yeah.
I'm chill with it. So, yeah, Philip has come here to pitch her on the Fed Sons versus Capellan Confederation Factory Pro-Am Memorial Weekend Tournament or whatever.
This weekend only, only, only.
Yeah. She's still not interested. She's like, no. He's just like, listen. Oh, actually, he says, it's cute that you heard an offer in there. Or a chance to refuse. But, oh, he's like, you know, this is coming all the way from the top. All the way from New Avalon, you know? And I'm like, is it? I don't know if it is.
Is it? Exactly. Yeah. Doubt.
She's like, okay, you know, what if I win? He's like, oh, if you win, you're going all the way. Hans Davion will know your name personally. And she's like, well, you see, Phil, you should have led with that. And since you asked so nicely, of course I'll be a part. And he's just like, haha, I knew you'd see it my way. Like, oh, man. Yeah, so he comes and strong arms her into doing this fight. And eventually she's like, he's not going to stop. And she gives in. She does. But he didn't really give her an option.
Yeah, surprise.
And then he follows it up with like, I don't think he can get out of it either. I handpicked you for a reason.
Yeah, he certainly did.
That's not a big deal, though, right? I would say all in all, the fight, I'd bet on them, actually. This doesn't seem too bad. Surely this isn't the only problem here that they're going to face.
Well, I'm sure, too, if you're a jobber in the Solaris circuit, somebody comes up to you with a out-of-reach offer, that your odds of making it through that fight aren't that great.
It's suspicious, right?
Yep.
Yeah, it's suspicious.
Look, nobody's in a stinger.
Do stingers even... I wonder. You know what? I bet there's a whole stinger racket. That's where some people start. It's just stingers, like, medium lasering each other's.
Oh, dude, Stinger League?
Yeah, Stinger
League. That sounds awesome. Dude, it's like when you go up to the dirt track. Come on, let's go catch a Stinger League. They're like 5 C-bills a pop.
Yeah.
Get yourself in a hot dog and a beer.
The lawnmower race circuit.
Exactly, dude. Stinger League. We got to hold Stinger League.
We technically are going to.
Yeah, I'm going to hold it right here in my basement.
That brings up a good point. Do we need to pick up D-listers for this?
Everyone in this story is a D-lister.
That's the true point.
So they're all up for grabs. I'm going to take the Hunchback pilot.
I guess we could. You could take Dell. And then we could get Dell on the D list. See at the end. That's a good point. This technically it's a separate work,
right?
You know, right? I mean, he's making a good point. We should,
right?
I like where he's going.
And they're all D-listers.
They're all D-listers.
With the asterisk that this is separate from the Warrior Series D-lister that we're coming up with. These are independent short fiction D-listers.
Yes, yes. But it still adds to the pile that we have to, the more the merrier in that case, right? So I'm
going to go for Boris. Oh, yeah. I'm going to push for Boris, the Jenner pilot.
The Jenner pilot. You know what? I'm going to go political with this, and I'm going to go with you in on the Jenner pilot because I want that.
Oh,
Jenner.
No.
I will nominate Boris with you.
Now I have done it.
That leaves me picking Dell because I won't ever bet against the commando.
I like it.
So he stomps off, and I like the Ren, the tech, comes back up. I love this scene. You feel like it's one shot, right? He goes into the background and then you see like her come up with like a rag. You know, she's like wiping her hands on a rag. Like, oh, what was his problem? It wasn't, she says, dispensing free advice. And Dell's like, no, he's Mr. Opportunity.
I like the dynamic duo here.
Yeah.
All of their combos are great.
They're great. Dell tells her that, you know, she's got a match in the factory in a week now. And Ren says, well, you know, normally a pilot would kill for that showcase. But Dell tells her, oh, come on. You know the real deal. We have a situation on our hands. We got to call a meeting. We're in deep trouble. We got to call everyone. All right, let's get everyone together. And the scene like fades to black. And you're like, oh, they have to call a meeting. Okay.
What for? What does she mean everyone?
Yeah, with who?
There's a lot of questions here.
Yeah. I love this part. What a cool opening. This whole scene with Ren and Dell. And then Philip Capet comes up. This is great. How perfect is this?
It is Stackpole to a T. 7 pages in, we've got the whole setup, as well as the primer to get us back into the mindset of a warrior, which for us is really easy. We've been there. But for somebody that might not have picked up those books in a while, you get right back into the fiction and into the mindset of Capet, understanding the whole arc that's going on with Justin. Within these 7 pages, on top of the fact that we've got a fight set up, we've got all the vibes in line here to see, hey, Capet's up to no good, and he wants this D-rank fighter to take part in whatever scheme he's got that he's not exactly being forthcoming on.
We'll talk about this more later, but this is very likely for some people coming into Battletech now as it grows in popularity, as we're having the second run. By the way, number 3 best-selling miniature game currently, Battletech. Round of applause there for Catalyst.
Let's go.
Ironwind and everyone that made that possible. But back to my point, this is in the box that you pick up at Target. And this very well might be the first bit of Battletech fiction anyone ever reads. Dang. And Stackpole understood the assignment because,
yeah,
as Aaron said, if you hadn't read the Warrior Trilogy in 15 years and you picked this up, it doesn't matter. You don't even have to remember who Philip Capet is. The setup is quick and clean and concise.
Punchy.
Punchy, exactly. He does a great job.
That's a good point. And Solaris is a good place to start it, too. You get it. There's mechs that fight right away. And then in the box, you're like, here's some mechs. Fight them.
It's got a little everything, as we're going to see. There's mechs. There's people in mechs. There's people fighting over mechs.
Patriotism.
There's politics surrounding mechs. It's the whole Battletech package.
So then we get the scene of Dell and all of, I think it's about a dozen other like low-ranking mech pilots. They're having this meeting in the basement of this club, this dingy bar, right? It's very, it's like this place, I think it describes it as post-flood chic. And
it's called the pit.
The pit. Yes.
I was waiting, but I was like, I can't wait to drop the name. It's called the pit.
They're in the pit.
We know of one other club right now, the Valhalla Club, right? Which is the Warrior's afterlife. This feels like not that.
Yeah.
Right? It's like as far away from that as you can get. It's some real like underworld, like, are not under.
They literally have pirated streams, like, playing on the TVs, basically is what it says.
That was such a cool detail. I loved when I read that. I was like, oh, this immediately sets the tone, right? It spared every expense the pit did.
Yep.
Yeah, it feels like they just have some, like, cheap laptop, like, HDMI mirrored onto the thing, and they're just, like, on some weird Russian website, their browser open, you know? They're pulling, like, some, like, shady streams off somewhere. It's, like, so trashy. I love it. And they're not even... They're in the basement, which is even worse. And I just see Fight Club, right?
That's it. That's exactly what I see. You beat me to it.
It's Fight Club.
I was going to say, it's the basement from Fight Club.
It's the basement from Fight Club. It is.
Yeah. You got Tom Waits playing upstairs.
Yeah. Yeah.
You walk down, there's like a single light source.
Oh my God, dude. Tom Waits would totally play on like Solaris.
Absolutely.
He would
too. At the pit.
Yeah. At the pit. Yeah, at the pit. Oh my God, dude. Tom Waits in a Battletech movie? That'd be so sick.
I know Aaron's been waiting to cast him for something.
He'll show up someday.
It's true.
So Del is down here. There's like a dozen other pilots. It says that they're not posers. They're not tryhards. They're not down here in their cooling vests and stuff. They're not trying to look tough. Oh, it's just some guys with some clothes on, except for Meredith Devlin. Don't forget about Devlin. Devlin's always been here. She's a mech pilot, says she has this whole like unknown mercenary persona. She's always dressed well, is what Del notices.
The anime hits real hard here. It's like some real like in the corner. The lady like dressed in the mysterious
preacher
girl outfit. And she's just like silent.
Yeah, she keeps quiet and takes notes. So the scene starts, you see the shot glass hit the table. Del has just slammed a shot of vodka, and she's like, boom, hits the bar. She's like, sorry about the short notice, people, but we have an emergency. And I like, this is where Boris like comes in, like, oh, sorry, I'm late. It's all right, Boris. Have they talked to you yet? It's so cool.
So we're in the epitome of the second chapter in this little novella, and already I'm like, oh, I know Del through and through. Like, this Stackpole has done such a good job. Like, this, like, setting the scene, like, is so flawless. I'm like, yeah, that sounds like something Del would totally do. Which she is a weird cool thing to say about a character that I've only read about for one page.
Yeah. Like, she's telling everyone. She's like, all right, so the thing we feared would happen did happen. Okay? Philip Capet came to the hangar, told me I'm fighting in this match. I'm fighting Boris. And we're fighting in the factory. She's like, you know, for the honor of nations and all that. And I'm like, this one girl's like, the factory, wow. And she starts clapping until she looks around and she's like, oh, that's not, she like stops clapping. And she's like, no, that's not good. Listen, this is a problem.
For everyone here.
Yes. She tells everyone that before she even explains, she's like, look, we just got to shut it all down. All right, you guys got to get out of here. We got to get off planet, clean it all up. Show's over, folks. We got to go. And you're like, what's going on? As a reader, I'm like, I don't even know. I remember being here. Like, what are they up to? It's funny because one of the other pilots brings up, oh, Trip Ishikawa, by the way. I thought it was a cool name. And I just wanted to say it. Trip Ishikawa is like, just it's not a big deal. You just go up, do one fight. No one's going to remember you. You just come back down here. You know, who cares? And Del's like, let me explain. All right. You know the whole thing, how they record our fights and they go out to the distributors and they have the actors do the whole thing. They just use our footage and they make like, they dramatize, you know, they do the whole thing with them. No big deal. But remember, we do it a little differently. Okay. Because, and we learn here, check this out. They've got like an editing suite. All right. Like somebody, they all chipped in on like an Adobe subscription. And you realize their whole hustle is that they all take footage from their fights and they edit it themselves. Somebody got into video editing and they were like, dude, we can just cut them up ourselves. We can get in front of it. We can do that work and then sell our edited tapes to these distributors. So these pilots have been doing their own editing, but what they do is they'll take one fight and they'll chop up all the angles and they'll cut up all the footage from different fights together. They're taking all this footage and they're like manufacturing these like tapes for the regional distributors.
They're like double and tripling the amount of fights they can get out of this footage. And
exactly.
And they explain it here that they're selling those each as exclusive fights. So one fight might be sold a dozen times as an exclusive fight. So it's driving up the price of that footage, even though what they're getting at the end result is not exclusive at all.
And because it's big distributors and they're just pushing it out to local stations, technically, if someone was looking closely enough, they might notice some things, but no one's looking closely enough, right? The checks keep clearing. Everyone's happy. It's fine. Everything's going fine, right?
These MechWarriors are making more than they probably would at this bracket, just slumming it normally. So literally everyone's happier.
Yep.
They even do their own commentary, right? They just like make this nice little package. I love this hustle, by the way. They're just like, the MechWarriors were just like, we should make videos.
They're on the MXC grind.
Yeah. So Trip's like, yeah, you know, everyone's happy. It's good. And Del tells him, sure. But the thing is, Trip, you have to remember that from their point of view, we are perpetuating fraud on a grand scale. Okay? Technically, this is illegal. And people with money have lawyers, okay? And we don't.
And right now, everything's fine and good, right? But this spotlight that's about to be painted on them, they're going to want B-roll from before. They're going to want, like, history of this pilot that's showing up. And that means someone is going to be looking a little bit more scrupulously.
Yeah, they're going to want backgrounds and interviews and stuff. And basically, this whole thing only works because no one's looking, right? The moment someone starts looking, it's going to stop working.
That's why they're hanging out down here in the pit.
Exactly. That's why they're in the pit. And so Del tells him, look, you guys got to go. Get your dropship tickets now. We got to get out of here. The gig's up.
It's some real like, listen, I'm screwed, but you guys don't have to be. You guys can get out.
Exactly. She does offer to, she's like, I'm going to do the fight. Me and Boris will do it. We'll figure it out. But you guys should go. Because I think she even brings up, if she goes now, that'll be even more suspicious, right? If the person who's doing the fight just like disappears overnight. So we're going to act like everything's cool so that by the time they start investigating, you guys will be long gone. So, and Del says, so you should all get out of here unless someone sees a way out for us. And this is where Meredith Devlin stands up with the long blonde braid. She's like, I do. And Del's like, what? And remember, because Meredith hasn't like talked, like she like never talks, right? And she's like, oh yeah, I know what to do. And Del's like, oh cool. What are you going to do? She's like, don't worry about it. I got it. Don't worry about it. It's so, she doesn't tell him. Meredith's just like, I got it though. Don't worry. Do your fight. I'll take care of it. It'll be all right. And that's it.
Because that scene, I feel like it's like all of a sudden Meredith speaks and everyone's just like dead silent. Some real like pin drop silence. And then she's just like, do your fight. I'll take care of it.
Meredith Devlin, the well-dressed woman, she said she'll take care of it. She said, don't worry about it. It's fine. Go do the fight.
I do like how that's the least assuring thing that could have been said. Meredith could have thrown in like any extra sentence and people could have been like, oh, okay, there is something going on. But instead, Meredith plays that one real close to the chest. Don't worry about it. I got it all sorted, potentially. Just don't die.
There's a time and a place to be uncommunicative, but Aaron's right. I don't know that this is the place, but it is when you're trying to have an interesting plot point. So here we are. I love this little scene. The first part sets up the fight, right? But there's only so much tension there, right? It's like, oh, these guys are going to fight in mechs on Solaris. It's like, okay, well, that's what we're here for. There's not a lot of, but now it's like, oh, actually, there's this whole other like weight piggybacking on the fight itself, which is this like subplot of the fraud.
Yeah, this little hustle they got. We're moving. It's over. Like, this thing's popping. We're already okay. We had the mech bay scene. We had the pit scene. Now we're doing the fight. She's like, it's fine. They're like, should we explain it? No, don't explain it. Let's just keep moving. You get it. I'm like, I do get it. And I'm down with it. I get it. Yeah, they're doing the fights. We gotta go. It's time to get in that commando. So, then we get a little bit of a time skip. It's now the 28th of April, so it's a week later, and it's the day of the fight. I like how this little section starts with, all week Del was anxious that there would be like this big media blitz, and she would get promoted, and her name would be splashed everywhere. But, luckily it turns out, she wasn't really in all the ads and stuff, she was barely in it. It says that all the promos, they basically just focused on the other pilot, the more veteran, Sarah Carlson, which is, that's the hunchback pilot, her teammate. It is funny, though. I like, it says that normally Del would be mad about this, but actually she was like, no, this actually works out for me. Because it's like, she's like not in any of the ads, basically. It's like, and Sarah Carlson, and someone else. And she's like, I should be mad about that, but that's okay.
I like how during that part, there's the specific line that Stackpole throws in here, she didn't get mentioned at all. In fact, Carlson made it sound as she was alone taking on the Capellan dogs, which will be something that we get to talk about a little later this episode, but he threw in that little line of foreshadowing here. We just didn't have any of the puzzle pieces yet
put it together. Point. Yeah.
Yeah.
As if she were alone.
There's a couple of instances here of foreshadowing. This is the first. There'll be a few more throughout that something's fishy. Well, we know something's fishy.
Yes, it's a Capet plan.
I like this bit where Del is thinking about the factory, right? Because that's where she's in the Merrick Arena. She's in that mech scale factory. We get a little bit about how it used to be this like manufacturing facility, but then it went bankrupt. So like this entertainment company bought it and like put cameras everywhere. But we've already seen the factory.
Yes.
Right?
In the Griffin fight.
In the Griffin fight. Exactly. Against Ares.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're back in the factory. She's fighting on the same map.
And a lot of the same points are hit in this section. Same the description we got in Warrior. But that is once again taking into account that we are covering Warrior right now, that it would be right. That fresh for us. So having it re-described here, I don't think is a problem at all.
I don't either. And also, we get a little extra. We get some little extra breadcrumbs dazzled in here to give us an even better idea.
I like Del thinks to herself that of all the major arenas, she's always thought that the factory was the one where the warfare seemed the most realistic. I was like, oh, that's true. You're looking around all of this and there's all this wreckage and debris and whatnot. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it seems like it's not, there's nothing artificial about it, right? There's not stuff popping out of the ground like in the Steiner Arena. It's not like this gladiatory pit. It's just an old burnout factory with a bunch of cameras everywhere.
Yeah, less room for showboating and the spectacle of the Solaris fights and more direct head-on head.
There's always room for showboating, especially yes. If you're a griffin that's just like, I'm going to give you my chest.
Yes.
I like where Del here is thinking about how down in her leagues, they have this little thing going, no one gets hurt. But up here, this is the big leagues, big names. It's different. She's in the factory and she's even thinking about like Capet and Justin Jiang and all that drama going on and how it's clearly like this whole proxy war for the nations. She hates this big drama, all this stuff. She's like, I don't care about any of that. This whole like nationality and, you know, I'm fighting for the Fed Sons or whatever. It's just funny. That's a good point. It just points out that down in like the lower leagues, it isn't like that, right? That's not the vibe down there. As you gain in notoriety, as you get those bigger tickets, you get those bigger personalities. That's where they really be like the fighters themselves become more representative of their like home nation or whatever. You know, that whole thing that's like, it's true in the Warrior books. They're like all about that, right? It is.
Yeah.
Well, and if we take that with what we've learned in Justin's world of being near the top of Solaris, that's also where big interest groups that are funding these things put pilots at risk purposefully to make sure things happen, make sure that people die, because it's more exciting and it makes more money at the back end of Solaris, where these fighters are just concerned about getting the paycheck at the end of the day.
Then we cut to Del in her dressing room, which is small enough that if she stretched out her arms, she could press her palms flat against both walls at the same time. So more like a closet, really. They give her a closet so she can change her clothes. And this is where she gets that little, she's walking out to her mech and the journalists stop her, right?
Real quick, though, with the closet, back to talking about Stackpole and the way he does things. It seems like an odd detail for him to pull out. It might have something to do with something that goes on later, because it kind of is just like, oh, I'm in a closet anyway, just saying.
This reporter stops her and they're asking her the usual, you know, how's it feel to have your first fight in the factory? She's like stammering like, it's an honor. And then the guy asks her, you know, you're a pretty obscure choice. Does your long labor in the lower arenas mean you deserve this slot? And she's like, I don't really, if I'd say deserve, if that's the word I'd use. And then it is funny. The other lady comes in and like saves her. But you realize like Sarah Carlson comes in and kind of shoos away the reporters. And you think, oh, she's kind of coming in for the save. But then you realize right after that she's like irritated about it. She's like, hey, you know, don't come in and steal my press. You got to earn it. And Del's like, you stopped me. Like, what do you mean? I wasn't doing any.
And Del's like, I'm actively trying to avoid them. Like, I want to walk away with this with the least impression I can give so it doesn't blow up my spot.
Oh, yeah. And this is the first time they've met, by the way. They haven't met up until this point.
Yes.
This is the first thing she says to her is the lady yells at her for, like, stealing her spotlight. It's like, is all of Capet's friends like this? Like, what?
So far, everyone we've met and we've heard from seem to be completely focused on the wrong stuff.
It's so funny. But, like, Del asks her, did you want to talk strategy or whatever before we go out there? And she's like, fine, I guess. She just tells her not to get in her way, basically. Just go out there, push them to me, I'll shoot them, whatever. What are you driving? A Locust? She's like, I got the commando. He's like, right. She's like, and then she just leaves. That's it. It's she just walks off. She goes to get in her hunchback. So
poor Del. Unfortunately, Bryn has to punch out at this point. So it's going to be me and Kanan flying duo for the rest of the episode.
Yeah. All right. This is when she goes over to the commando. Perrin, right? Ren is here. The tech, Ren. And oh, there's a gantry. Yeah, we get this bit where Del and Ren are hanging out by the gantry. I do like Ren tells her that he topped her up on SRMs, but he's like, hey, if you don't use them all, you know, think we can keep them? Like, he's like, hey, you know, they let me top you off. You know, maybe don't shoot them all and we can keep some of these. It's like they're really, I love this little bit because it shows they're like really pinching pennies. You know what I mean? He's like telling her, telling her to try not to shoot all the missiles, which is very funny. And, Del says probably have to earn it, which is, she's talking trash about that lady because he's like, you got to earn it. Del tells Ren, though, that it's like, I finally met my partner. Didn't go well. It's like, if I have any leftover ammo, it's because I didn't shoot her with it, which I thought was pretty funny. And Ren's just like, oh, you got to choose your targets wisely.
Yeah, Ren seems almost oblivious to the whole situation going on that Del's dealing with, where he's just like, listen, we can scrape up a couple SRMs.
Yeah.
Like, we might be looking good after this fight. Yeah. And Del's just like sweating.
Yeah, I do like he does point out, though, he's like, you know, if you are going to shoot her, you know, the hunchback's rear armor is significantly weaker. She's like, thank you. Del asks Ren if he had heard anything from Meredith. Remember, that's the other mech warrior. That's that lady that's going to help him out, right? She's like, oh, don't worry, I got it with the whole situation. And no word from Meredith so far. So
I like that his reaction is like, word? This is Meredith, remember? It goes and strengthens that earlier segment where it's like, she only says one sentence and everybody's shocked. Even the tech knows about it.
Exactly. But this is it. You know, she climbs in, you know, seals the cockpit. We get the whole startup sequence. So she's in the commando. We got, what, medium laser in the left arm, right-controlled short-range missile launchers, and the other in the middle of the chest. Oh, right. Cool. So the gantry retracted. It said that. So we see the gantry like, and then she doesn't do a Grayson style. She doesn't like explode the gantry.
I was going to say, this is one of the few surviving gantries that we see when mechs are leaving them in these series.
So this is it. The match begins, and Del and Sarah and the Hunchback, they go stomping off. It says she watched the tape as well. She's looked at all the maps. She has a pretty good idea of the terrain, even though she's never actually fought here before. But she says that, though. She's like, okay, she's going up there, and there's like a stairs over there. There's a ramp going up, so like, I'm going to go this way. She is, you know, they're trying to like get her bearings. I like, this is where she tries to pull up like the game feed, like listen to the radio while she's in the match, but she realizes that she doesn't get anything. It's just like a network standby. And she's like, oh, they don't let the fighters listen in when you're playing in this league, which is funny because it's like, oh, that's right. That's a good point. They freeze the fighters out so they can't listen to the commentary of their own match because they would give it away.
Now, when I read this, I did have the question of, I wonder if that's standard procedure, because I'm not sure if we got Justin tuning into the feed during his match. But my question was, did they specifically set that up because of what we're going to learn about this match?
Oh, right. Good point.
To the foreshadowing we were talking about earlier. So I didn't know if that was another element that Stackpole put in here of like, they are keeping these fighters in the dark.
Now, they do have those lights. Remember, Justin's like, oh, they blink lights at you. Them blinking lights, blinking green lights and whatnot. I like, she goes up the ramp to like that main area where I like, it says the equivalent of a couple city blocks lay below. Ruins combining to make a smaller labyrinth than a larger one. I like the imagery here of this factory. Yeah, it's like labyrinthine and there's like wreckage everywhere. As she's walking, she's crunching old mech parts and stuff, old pieces of armor, like underfoot. It's like, this place is like a wreck, right? What a cool, this probably is maybe the coolest like arena of all the Solaris arenas. I do like the factory. I mean, this is pretty cool.
It's the easiest one to envision. Absolutely. You can see it spot on here with the way Stackpole's describing it again.
I like, she pops around the corner and she sees the Hunchback, and the Hunchback like kind of turns at her, kind of points the cannon in her direction, and she like dips back. Even though it's her teammate, it still freaks her out. She doesn't even like looking at the AC-20 because she's like, dude, one shot from that thing and it would smear me all over the wall. I'm just going to hang back. So this is where their opponents make an appearance. Zhu Jin in the Trebuchet and Boris in the Jenner. Remember Boris? That's our boy.
One of the crew.
Yes. And oh, and remember, the Trebuchet switched its long-range missiles for the short-range missiles for fighting in the factory. So they start engaging. Carlson starts shooting at him with the autocannon. Oh, now, it does say the Trebuchet lets loose with the volley of those missiles, and you know, hits the Hunchback. It doesn't, he gets some missiles in, but I think this is where it looks like the Hunchback has like damaged its gyro a little bit. You know, already she's like taking some damage just from that like first volley. And then Boris and the Jenner comes around and rips into the Hunchback with his lasers, right? He comes around in the Jenner and Ren's like, what's he doing? Like, what about our plan? Like, he's just like going wild. She's like, Boris, what's up? She's like, we had a whole thing where we would not do this. But like, yeah, Boris is going in. It's so funny. He's just running around that Jenner shooting lasers and stuff.
Yeah, and this has Del completely turned around in this fight, because she was thinking like, okay, the Hunchback's going to be my center here. We're going to do that. The potential gyro hit takes it from being like first place to first one out. And now Boris is going rogue on the plan that they had. Now she's starting to sweat. She's like, I'm in danger.
So the Hunchback and the Trebuchet continue to engage, right? They exchange another volley. And also, this is Boris comes around in the Jenner, and he's going for the backstab on the Hunchback. And Del sees this. And she's like, Boris, what are you doing? She's like, I got to shoot Boris. So she turns. She opens up on Boris with the missiles, which does get him to like break off his advance. He's like going straight for the backstab and she's like, no. And she shoots Boris with the missiles and he like, oh, and he like breaks off and starts running away. This is where they catch a break. The trebuchet and the hunchback are like maneuvering. Beck takes some laser hits and this exchange has been fairly equal so far until right here, Sarah Carlson finally nails like this perfect autocannon shot, like right into the side of the trebuchet, like boom, like just blast the right leg, right? Just you see armor and boom, it explodes and like shrapnel goes everywhere. And it's like you can see the Myomers getting torn up. She gets like this incredible shot. The autocannon finally catches the trebuchet and really starts to swing it around. It like obliterates the leg. She's surprised, like Dell's like, oh, it's going to go down. It doesn't go down. Right, Zujin's a good pilot, so the trebuchet still on its feet, but that was a pretty crucial hit. So things are kind of starting to swing their way.
And I love how Stackpole like set up that shot where he's talking about like the trebuchet is taking advantage of the fact that the autocannon on the hunchback is mounted in the shoulder.
Right.
So its tracking isn't as neat, yeah, allowing the trebuchet to get away. But as soon as that shot lined up, that's AC-20.
Right. That is cool.
Did its job.
It is. It talks about the trebuchet pilot is maneuvering, thinking about how, yeah, the hunchback has its cannon in a particular location, right? And it has to line up. So yeah, if you're good, you can kind of catch him a little flat footed. So they can't quite get that cannon around to get that clean shot. No, Sarah. Yeah, she totally gets her. It's awesome. So Boris comes back around again. He opens up on Dell with his lasers. And Dell, she doesn't fire back now, though. This is where she breaks. And she's like, no, I'm just going to start. She like hits the switchback ramp. She's going up the platforms. Remember, it's like there's a lot of verticality to the factory, right? There's various levels. You're going up and down ramps onto walkways and stuff. Yeah, because Dell's like, I don't know, this guy's going to shoot at me. This wasn't even our, I'll just go. I'll just start running. It is funny. Boris doesn't pursue Dell. He continues advancing on the hunchback. Unfortunately, the hunchback has an AC-20 and he totally gets tagged by the autocannon here. Yeah, the hunchback opens up on it, smashes into the left side, and oh yeah, completely blows off. Remember, because the Jenner has those like kind of wings kind of thing. Yeah, hunch, like autocannon shot, boom, explodes the left wing and like sparks come flying out and the Jenner like slams into a pile of debris. It's awesome. So like, yeah, man, she crushes this Jenner with the autocannon.
No light pilot wants to get hit with an AC-20 at any time.
Boris is wiling out. Dell, it's like, this is not what we talk about. This guy's like going in. He's like on a suicide mission. Like, Boris, what happened? She's so confused. This is where, remember, Trebuchet's still up and it still has missiles. So this is where the hunchback eats another volley of SRMs, and it does some pretty serious damage to the left arm, which has a laser on it. So, you know, it gets fused, you know, it gets all messed up. So basically, the trebuchet is able to do some serious damage to the hunchback here. And this is where Dell's like, oh, well, guess I'd better help, I guess. And so she kind of flips it around. I like this because it isn't quite a clean shot. The hunchback's a little bit in the way. I mean, it is a clear shot, but Dell turns around and fires all of her SRMs and they just rip right past the hunchback to hit the trebuchet. I like there is a moment where she's like, oh man, that could have been bad. If her aim hadn't been as good, she would have totally lit up the hunchback right in the back with like a full like volley of SRMs. And so we almost get this final standoff moment between the hunchback and the trebuchet here, where Dell shoots her missiles and the hunchback like slams the trebuchet again, another leg shot, hammers it with the autocannon. It's starting to lose balance. The trebuchet fires back with all of its missiles. There's like all this, there's chunks and there's smoke everywhere. It's like the cartoon, like dust ball situation. But then we see like through the smoke, it's like the single laser from the hunchback, like pierces the smoke and strikes the trebuchet. And it like it says it evaporates the shoulder joint and the left arm goes like spinning off. The hunchback shoots this final laser and it like slices the arm off of the trebuchet. It's so cool. And then so it's all off balance. And this is where the trebuchet like staggers and like boom, like hits the ground. It's down. It's over. We did it. The Jenner is down, right? This is where Del goes over to it to be like, I hope he's okay. And then she looks back at Sarah Carlson and the hunchback turns around and points the autocannon, targets the commando with the autocannon. And Del's like, what? I like this though. It's like, Del wanted to scream, but a strange calm possessed her. In a heartbeat, it all came together with crystal clarity. And then she has this galaxy brain moment where she realizes the play. She's like, wait, this isn't about me honoring the Federated Sons and all that stuff Capette was saying. He's like, I get it now. No, this is about, I just look Asian. And she's like, oh, they're just going to have all this footage. They're probably going to cut it together so that I look like I'm with the Capellans. Even in the moment, she's like, God, they'll take that clip of me shooting my missiles and make it look like I was shooting. She's like, oh, I get it. I get it. She's like, I get it. And so immediately she's like, he just hits the throttle and starts running, right? And just blasts off. And the hunchback is like chasing her. She's like, boom, boom, like shooting the autocannon, like the walls exploding and stuff behind her as like Del's running around in the commando.
And I love during her realization scene here that it makes the conversation she had with Capette about Billy Wolfson so funny.
Yeah.
Because her big gripe with Wolfson was that he kept insulting her as a Capellan. And she's like, I'm not a Capellan, dude.
Not a Capellan.
Like, you could make fun of me for being Combine. We hit it there. And Capette's doing the exact same thing as he's calling Wolfson boorish for the same behavior. And then it also makes his plan just that much dumber, where it was just like, he kept so much behind the curtain that it immediately leaves room for his plan to get destroyed for really no reason.
No reason. And obviously, you know, Sarah Carlson probably knew this the whole time, right? And that probably went into why she was so like weird and short with her in the mech bay.
Yeah.
Because she knew that she was about to have to like maybe kill this girl. So it all makes sense.
It all comes together right here.
So we get Del. She's trying to leverage her speed the best she can, right? But we're in this tight little factory. The hunchback's like perfect for what they're doing here. And it's just so, but you can see, and she's like clipping her with like the lasers, and she can hear the autocannon just like pounding away. She kind of like switches back on her, like cuts back through the middle. I do like, it says she tries to leverage her, like a good mech warrior, present her most undamaged armor towards the hunchback. So if she does catch around, maybe she'll be able to kind of get through it, get one more in. So she comes around, hits her with the SRMs. So we get, you know, four SRMs slam into the hunchback, you know, like slices her with the laser. She's like looking for internals. She's like fishing for internals. She's just kind of like trying to do this thing, circle around her, keep like on this arc. And I like, right at the end there, she's like, looks like she's going back up the ramp, but then boom, like she cuts back around and she like fakes her out. Okay. Carlson, boom, fires another autocannon, misses the shot. She's like, cool. Del breaks and then cuts around and then shoots the laser into the, cause like the hunchback's like opened up. She's fishing for internals, cuts around her, baits her with the autocannon, gets the whiff. All right. Comes around on her weak side, gets that laser in there, fires the SRMs, and I do like it. She knocks the little laser off the hunchback. You know what I'm talking about? The little small laser. She like hits it with the missile. You see the laser, and it goes flying off. But yeah, hits it with the SRMs, gets that internal. The rest of the warheads detonated deep within the machine's breast, and with these explosions, the medium mech shook and twisted, and you see Carlson and the hunchback. She like tries to take a step forward and just like, ugh, like takes a knee and like topples over. Boom, crashes into the ground. She did it. She did it. She took down the hunchback in the commando.
The commando magic strikes again.
Commando magic. Commando magic. Unbelievable. Good play, though. You're like, man, she's actually good, though, is the thing about Del here is like, oh, she's actually good, though. Like, this was like a very impressive performance, you know? Shout outs to Perrin.
But it also, it's something Brent had talked about in a previous episode, where Del has fought in the low leagues for so long, which is filled with amateurs, new pilots, the dangerous types. So it really comes out here that she's had to build up her skill set to avoid dying.
Yeah.
Because of the chaos in the lower ranks.
She's a real one. Yeah, exactly. Forged by fire. Ice cold. I do like, so we get this scene. Del walks the commando over to the hunchback. And she can see it's like the hunchback cockpit. It has those like blinds. It's got like the little capsule on top with like the slats. It always depicted as like those horizontal slats. It's been like messed up. The blinds have been torn out. She can clearly see Sarah like down in there. It's just like a little cage around her now. And this Del walks over and turns her speakers on. And she's just like, you intended to kill me from the start. And Carlson's like, I didn't want to. I was following orders. Please. But of course, Del doesn't kill her. She says, you want an easy death. You have to earn it. So.
Yeah. And she follows it up with, a couple weeks from now, you square off with Justin Zhang.
Yes.
That's going to be a hard death. And I think you've already paid in full.
It's over. She's going to fight Justin. And a couple weeks, it says. Okay, interesting. But that said, yeah, leaves her on the floor. She's like, that's cool. You're fighting Zhang soon. So I'm out of here. And she takes the commando back to the hangar, puts it back in the gantry. She's like so happy. She's like all giddy. She's like, I did it. She's awesome. I love this character.
Yeah, it's just one of those little slices of characters that we get that Stackpole's provided us here through Del, where it's somebody on the outskirts of all the big motions in the BattleTech universe, and she just happened to coincidentally brush up against one of them here, and she just did whatever she needed to do to get out of the situation.
Incredible. So she parks it in the gantry, and she sees, you know, of course, there's like reporters and stuff down there. And she's like, here we go, clenching her teeth. She's bracing herself for what she thinks is about to happen, which is all this scandal about. She's so worried. She's like, they're good. You know, they're going to find out about our little Holovig racket we got going on. And comes down the ladder. Reporter approaches. Your victory against Sarah Carlson. Did you follow your strategy or improvise? She's like, what? And we were surprised when we got told that everyone had agreed to a free-for-all. How did you approach this? And she's like, huh? What? She's like, oh, wait. Well, that explains it. And it's so funny. You get this, like, all the reporters are asking her questions all quickly. She can barely, like, keep up. Like, oh, well, you know, commandos are really for flexible roles. I like this one guy comes in and he's like, your commando is really just a junior centurion. And I thought that was interesting. Do you guys agree with that? Is a commando just a junior centurion?
Yeah, I haven't really thought about it before I read that, but I guess it could be from a reporter angle. They look similar.
I like, so this is where she's surrounded by the reporters. Ren comes up and throws the robe around her. And he's like, questions later, people, you know, come on, let's get you out of here. And he takes her back to the dressing room area. But yeah, like he takes her to this like dressing room. She's like, this is my dressing room. She points at the closet at the end of the hall. She's like, my stuff's down there.
She's like, I can't touch both walls at the same time. This isn't it.
It's like, no, this is it. And he like opens the door and it's this nice suite and there's snacks and there's drinks and like all of her friends are here. Andrea, Trip Ishikawa. Oh, and of course, Meredith Devlin. Mm-hmm. I love this line. It's just like Trip Ishikawa, Meredith Devlin, not at her from the catering table. It's just, he just wrote, I don't, it's like this whole, I love this. It's like, she's so confused. Like, I don't, what is, someone hands her a champagne. Oh, this is how we treat winners. Oh, like, over there, those flowers. There's even a bouquet from Gray Notin. Like, that's so funny. Gray Notin sent a bouquet of flowers.
He'll take any opportunity to sting Capet.
I love that. Yeah, he sends the flowers. And Del's just like, are we not in jail? What's going on? And Trip points at Meredith. He's like, she fixed it. And Del's like, what do you mean you fixed it? And this is where Meredith explains. She's like, look, we used to be in a Merc unit. I worked on contracts and stuff there. Basically, Meredith just tells her that she read the paperwork thoroughly.
I thought that was so funny. The big, like, reveal plan was, I just read our contract.
Yeah. Yeah, it turns out her secret plan was, yeah, she read the paperwork. And she's like, well, you know, there's these cancellation clauses about the ratings. You know, if ratings reach certain levels, there's all these clauses and stuff. And, like, rooms for renegotiation and stuff. And this is what's interesting, though. It says the big broadcasters wanted background footage on Del and Boris. And those smaller distributors had the footage that the big companies wanted. So when it came time for them to sell it to them, they had to give them their viewership numbers, which turns out are considerably higher than what they were reporting to the Mech Warriors. It turns out that these like small distributors were making way more money off their footage than they were letting on. It turns out that they'd been defrauding them. I like Dell's like, what? They were defrauding us. They're like, I know. Isn't this great?
It's like the scam we were running, they were running a better scam.
A better scam. Hustle or scam. You decide. So, yeah, Meredith Devlin just talked to them and brought it up. It's like I brought up the cancellation clauses. We renegotiated. They, you know, they looked over our thing so long as we looked over their thing. Win-win. everything's fine. We're good.
Yeah, she specifically states that because of the little win, we're more valuable to them than ever. Which, by the way, is why they convinced the Battle Commission there wasn't any problem here.
No problem here.
And it's just like, oh.
It's fine.
Everybody's happy to make some money here.
Don't worry about it. And of course, then you hear, I think you will find this victory can best be described as Pyrrhic. And like you look over and Philip Capet is there, arms folded up against the door frame, like enjoying your little celebration. And you're like, oh man, here we go. I like Dell's just like breathing, like count to 10. Gonna be okay. Everyone hates Phil.
Yeah.
I like Philip Capet is like, oh, by the way, Sarah is fine, as if you cared. You're like, what?
Yeah.
Dell brings up, what do you care, Philip? You wanted me dead. You told her to kill me. And Philip's like, look, I didn't want you dead. Oh, I just wanted you defeated. You know, means to an end. No big deal, right? Wasn't going to think you were going to destroy 3 mechs in an open battle, which she did. And that was a goal, but I guess I spoiled that. But this is where Capet laughs and he just explains, well, actually, no, because we have all that footage. We're in the factory, so many camera angles. He's like, we can just cut it up and kind of like, you know, make our own narratives with the footage, which is like so funny. Like Dale's just like, he's not wrong.
Yeah.
You know, that's he's right. It's good footage. That's basically Phillips like, it's good footage. We'll still make money. And it is interesting. Dell asks Philip Capet why he chose her out of anyone. He's like, there's plenty of just losers hanging around. Why'd you pick me? And Philip tells her that she came highly recommended. He says, you have enemies out there who don't like you at all. And I thought that was interesting. We never revisit. I wonder what he's talking about.
Yeah. And Dell seems just as confused.
Yeah, she asks him. She's like, who? He's like, I don't know. Wouldn't tell you. You're like, what is that, though? I wonder who I did. When I read this, I was like, oh, I wonder who her enemies are. So Dell asks him, well, you should hang out, you know, have a little party. And he tells her, oh, no, you know, we're having a party for Sarah at Valhalla. And so, yeah, he's going back to the Valhalla Club so they can have a party for Sarah, the girl that just lost.
Just lost. Yeah.
Yeah. I do like on his way out, she tells him, remember, Capet, if Sarah doesn't stop Justin, you're in his sights next. And she sees fear in his eyes. And you're like, yeah, she does. He's afraid. So, oh, and Boris is okay, right? Says he's in the med bay. He'll be all right. Doctors are checking him out. He's going to make it to the party. And Dell's like, did anyone hear what he said? He said, I have enemies out there. What was he talking about? And everyone's just like, I don't know. Who can say? Well, like Dell says, well, at least we know they're out there. And Meredith nods. And yeah, this is it. They're like, they're all just holding their champagne glasses and they clink them together. Perhaps I do deserve it. Just this once. To fools who think having more money makes them real smart. Let's hope they too get what they deserve. Clink.
And that's it. That's Spanner in the Works.
So that's Spanner in the Works. This is the included novella inside the Essentials box, right? This is kind of one of the most recent fiction releases as the time of this recording, technically. And what a cool, I love, they put these little, you know, novellas in a bunch of these boxes. But I love this one, by the way. I got so excited when I opened it up and I saw this. I was like, yes, Stackpole, dude, let's go. And again, showing a like, you know, a mastery of like economic storytelling. We get so much character in such a tight little novella that, I mean, I'm like, it is like legitimately charming. I actually had a good time with this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, it's 24 pages. And in that, there is a full, interesting story that this is something Brent was mentioning earlier. This might be the first piece of fiction somebody reads of BattleTech because they went to Target and they picked up the box set.
Right.
Maybe just on the cover, it's on its own. And Stackpole does such a good job having this as like a little sampler plate of the BattleTech universe. You get so much in here, but without overloading anyone. It could have been a throne room story, but it's a little isolated story that takes place in a very small period of time.
It's punchy.
And I love the use of Del as the main character. Del felt to me like she filled the same role that Grayson filled in the Grey Death trilogy, where he was just somebody to walk you into the world, into the universe.
That's a great point. This could be someone's first BattleTech book. It's in the Essentials box. And, you know, I do love the combat in it is well done, but it is detailed. It is like a shot by shot,
yeah,
you know, step by step, which I think is fitting for that box because you get the Solaris like maps and it's, you know, it's all like classic BattleTech Solaris stuff. It really is, you know, telling you what you're about to get into. You're about to be shooting SRMs and knocking armor off and stuff. That's true. It does read like a, this would be a good little match. Now that I'm thinking about it. It is. Yeah, I think it does. It gets you excited to fight on Solaris.
Well, and I think it does a great job of being a shot by shot piece of combat. If this is somebody's first piece of fiction, their first introduction to BattleTech, it can help you frame the combat that you're going to see when you're playing with the Solaris maps and the mechs. You could have a framework to build off of. You could see that combat that way, which is the way we all see it whenever we're playing it. This is the way we've had all these years to envision.
Oh, and I love all the stuff about the distribution of the holovids and the fights and all that. That's like a recurring thing throughout this book all the way to the end. Even I love when Philip Capet comes back in, like, it's fine. We'll chop him up, send him off to the distributors. It's really, it's like all about like holovid distribution. I love this stuff. All of this, like, let's really like, how would this work? We have this universe where like mechs have these gladiatorial battles and we have holograms at this point. They can like do hologram playback of these mech battles. How would it work? And you're like, oh, of course, dude, there's like publishers. And there's all these distribution rights and stuff. In the Warrior book, they talk about that a little bit, but I love this is specifically like, oh yeah, there's all these like, there's just a market for like mech footage, right? There's just a market for like, yeah, like holo footage of like mech battles. And I'm like, of course there would be. That's such an interesting thing to think about. I love it.
Yeah, that was something Brent mentioned earlier, was how there's a market for that. But one thing that now that we've got the whole story, the one thing was, what was Capet's whole plan with this? Other than like making some money, it was like to build up Sarah Carlson for her fight with Justin Zhang. Oh, and there was all this subterfuge behind it. And it seems like probably could have just done this like straight up and there wouldn't have been any issue. There wouldn't have been any problems. Like, he probably could have said, hey, like, while I'm forcing you to do this, you'll take a dive at the end. Like, then you're out. You're scot-free.
Yeah. What was the play here? That's a good point. Like, it doesn't even seem that... It seems like a lot of trouble for... Yeah, he's just doing promo for Sarah Carlson, I guess.
The only thing I could think of, and this is something Stackpole alludes to at the very end when Dell's mentioned that, like, Justin's got his sights on you, and she notices there's fear in his eyes. That maybe it was that Capet's running out of people. like Billy Wolfson just died.
Yeah.
And that was his like number two. So if he doesn't have a number two anymore, then he's all that's left on the chopping block. So maybe raising Sarah Carlson,
good point, yes,
up on a platform would like throw her in between him and Justin.
Yes. Good point. He's trying to put some bodies in between him and Justin, right? Trying to stack the, that's a good point. Yeah. That makes sense. He is running out of dudes.
Yeah.
I wonder, you know, they're going to that party for Sarah at the end, you know, I wonder if Justin's there.
Oh, you know that Gray had to have crashed it. He loves crashing Capette's parties.
Yeah. You just like talking trash, like.
Yep.
Oh, what happened there, Capette? Looks like your girl got taken down by a commando. It is a, yeah. Gray's like, what are we throwing a party for? Everyone knows she lost, right? You know, she's like.
Room goes quiet. Gray goes into his booth.
Yeah, into the booth. That's funny. And you wouldn't even have to know who Philip Capette is to really, I mean, it helps, right? We, you know, we get all that extra flavor. But yeah, when you're like, oh, it could be someone's first. I was like, this guy could just work as literally mustache twirling villain. They do set him up. You could go in without context and still have a good time. It is funny to read this right in the middle of reading Warrior On Guard. I would recommend that in the, you know, it's like that's, you know, they always talk about reading order. You know, it's like, okay, well, you have to read On Guard up to chapter 32. Okay. Then you need to read the novella from the box set. All right. And then it's like, you know, I'm going to have the most like unhinged, like reading order list by the end of this. It's going to be incredible.
Years from now, somebody will have, they'll have one of the cork boards set up with all the lines drawn to the different read orders that we've established here.
Yes. Machete order. Also, it's just interesting that Michael Stackpole came back to this after so many years. I mean, the Warrior On Guard came out in like the late 80s. And it's also very funny that this comes out now. Like, it's like, how perfect is this? Like, the timing is...
It's wonderful for us.
Miraculous.
Lined up perfectly.
Yeah. He doesn't miss a beat, though. I can tell, of course, after an entire career, his writing is... I mean, this is punchy, right? This is professional. It's good, right? They're like, you can see while reading Warrior, we're like, he's a very economical storyteller, but like you can see here, he just gets better, right?
Yeah. It's like all that he learned, he took back here when writing this to step back and replicate the style he was writing in Warrior. Like it still has the same beats. It has the same move. It still works just like it, but you can feel all of that refinement in there as well.
This was really cool. And little spoiler alert, I did, just to make sure, I did check ahead. I was like, is Sarah Carlson mentioned in the Warrior On Guard? You know, I did a little investigation just to make sure I didn't miss anything. But no, to my knowledge, I couldn't find any mention. But they do mention like opponents that Justin faces between the matches that we see in the book. He does have matches where it says, you know, he's killed 8 pilots so far. And you realize, man, Sarah Carlson is just one of those nameless pilots that he smokes on his way through Solaris, which is so funny. She's not nameless anymore. This is really, this is a story about one of those pilots he smokes, I guess, which I was like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that was something I wondered, was if we were going to see that come back up, if we were to see the Sarah-Justin fight after reading this. But I guess we'll have to find out what fights are coming up when we get back to Warrior On Guard next week.
This was another episode of Mechs and Men. I am Kanan Hill. I was joined by my two good friends, Brent and Aaron. As always, we would like to thank the author, Michael A. Stackpole, and... of course, all the other writers and artists who work so hard to keep Battletech alive. I'd like to thank Catalyst Game Labs for being generous stewards of the property. And we'd like to thank you, the audience, of course. We have an email, advice@heat.management. If you have any questions, corrections, psychotic recommended reading orders, please, advice@heat.management. We're on social media, Instagram, Twitter, @ofmechsandmen. And please feel free to leave a review on your favorite podcast app. We really appreciate it. We will return next episode, where we will continue discussing Warrior On Guard by Michael A. Stackpole. Until then.
We'll see you next time.